17. Horror. Angels and Demons. Blood Pact. With the compact edit engine tucked under one arm and a sense of limitless possibilities filling her heart, Euphrati Keeler made her way through the stacks of Archive Chamber 3 towards Cinderman's table. The white-haired iterator sat hunched over the book he had shown her earlier, his breath misting in the chill air. She sat down beside him and placed the edit engine on the desk, slotting a memory coil into the imager slot.
"It's cold in here, Cinderman," she said. "How you haven't caught a fever, I'll never know."
He nodded.
"Yes, it is rather cold, isn't it? It's been like this for days now. Ever since the War Master was taken to Davin, in fact."
The screen of the edit engine flickered to life, its white screen bathing them both in its washed-out light as Keeler flicked through the images she had captured. She zipped through those she had taken while on Darwin's surface and those of Captain Loken and the Mournival prior to their departure for the Whisperheads.
"What are you looking for, exactly?"
asked Cinderman.
"This,"
she said triumphantly, angling the screen so he could see the image it displayed. The file contained 8 pictures, all taken at the War Council held on Davin, where Eugen Temba's treachery had been revealed. Each shot included First Chaplain Erebus, and she used the engine's trackball to zoom in on his tattooed skull. Cinderman gasped as he recognized the symbols on Erebus's head. They were identical to the ones in the book that he had shown Keeler on the subdeck.
"That's it, then," he breathed. "It must be the Book of Lorgar. Can you get any closer to get the symbols from all sides of Erebus's head? Is that possible?"
"Please, it's me," she replied,
her hands dancing across the keys of the edit engine. Using all the various images and shots of the word-bearer from different angles, Euphrati was able to create a composite image of the symbols tattooed onto his skull and projected onto a flat pane. Cinderman watched her skill with admiration, and it took her less than 10 minutes to resolve a high-gain image of the symbols on Erebus's head. With a grunt of satisfaction, she made a final keystroke, and a glossy hard copy of the screen's image slid from the side of the machine with a whirring sigh. Keeler lifted it by the corners and waved it for a second or two to dry it, before handing it to Cinderman.
"There," she said. "Does that help you translate what this book says?"
Cinderman slid the image across the table and held it close to the book, his head bobbing back and forth between the book and his notes as his finger traced down the trails of cuneiforms.
"Yes, yes," he said excitedly. "Here, you see, this word is laden with vowel transliterations, and this one is clearly a personal argo, though of a much denser polysyllabic construction."
Keeler tuned out of what Cinderman was saying after a while, unable to make sense of the jargon he was using. Carcassy or Ollerton might be able to understand the iterator, but images were her thing, not words.
"How long will it take you to get any sense out of it?" she asked.
"What? Oh, not long, I shouldn't wonder," he said. "Once you know the grammatical logic of a language, it is a relatively simple matter to unlock the rest of its meaning."
"So how long?"
"Give me an hour, and we'll read this together, yes?"
She nodded and pushed her chair back, saying,
"Fine. I'll take a look around, if that's all right."
"Yes, feel free to have a look at whatever catches your eye, my dear, though I fear much of this collection is more suited to dusty academics like myself."
Keeler smiled as she got up from the table.
"I may not be a documentarist, but I know which end of a book to read, Kirill."
"Of course you do. I didn't mean to suggest—"
"Too easy," she said, and wandered off into the stacks to browse while Cinderman returned to his books. Despite her quip, she soon realized that Cinderman was exactly right. She spent the next hour wandering up and down shelves packed with scrolls, books, and musty loose-leaf manuscripts. Most of the books had unfathomable titles like Reading Astrologies and Astrotelepathic Auguries, Malefic Abjurations and the Multifarious Horrors Associated with Such Works, or The Book of Atum. As she passed this last book, she felt a shiver travel the length of her spine and reached up to slide the book from the shelf. The smell of its worn leather binding was strong, and though she had no real wish to read the book, she couldn't deny the strange attraction it held for her. The book creaked open in her grip, and the dust of centuries wafted from its pages as she opened them. She coughed, hearing Cinderman reading aloud from the Book of Lorgar as he translated more of the text. Surprisingly, The words before her were written in a language she could understand, and her eyes quickly scanned the page. Cinderman's words came again, and it took Euphratie a moment to register that the words she was hearing echoed the words she was seeing on the page, the letters blurring and rearranging themselves before her very eyes. The faded script seemed to illuminate from within, and as she read what they said, the book's pages burst into flames. She dropped the book with a cry of alarm. She turned and ran back towards where she had left Cinderman, turning the corner to see him reading aloud from the book with a terrified expression on his face. He gripped the edges of the book as though unable to let go, the words pouring from him in a flood of voices. A crackling, electric sensation set Euphrates' teeth on edge, and she cried out in terror as she saw a swirling cloud of bluish light hovering above the desk. The image twisted and jerked in the air, moving as though out of sync with the world around it. "Kirill, what's happening?" she screamed, as the terror of the whisperheads returned to her with paralyzing force, and she dropped to her knees. Cinderman didn't answer, the words streaming from his unwilling mouth, and his eyes fixed in terror on the unnatural sight above him. She could tell the same fear that she felt was also running hot in his veins. The light bulged and stretched as though something was pushing through from beyond, and an iridescent, questing limb oozed from its depths. Keela felt the anger that had consumed her in the months following her attack break through the fear, and she surged to her feet. Keela ran towards Cinderman and gripped his skinny wrists, as the suggestion of a rippling body of undulating glowing flesh began tearing through the light. His hands were locked on the book, the knuckles white, and she couldn't prise them loose as he continued to give voice to the terrible words within its pages. "Kirill, let go of the damn book!" she cried, as an awful ripping sound came from above. She risked a look upwards, and saw yet more tentacled limbs pushing through the light in an obscene parody of birth. "I'm sorry, Kirill," she shouted, and punched the iterator across the jaw. He pitched backwards out of his chair, and the torrent of words was cut off as the book fell from his hands. She quickly circled the table and lifted Cinderman to his feet. As she did so, she heard a grotesque sucking sound and a hard, wet thud of something heavy landing on the table. Euphratie didn't waste time looking back, but took off as fast as she could towards the stacks, supporting the lurching Cinderman as she went. The pair of them staggered away from the table as a glittering light behind them threw their shadows out before them, and a cackling shriek like laughter washed over them. Keela heard a whoosh of air, and something bright and hot flashed past her, exploding against the shelves with a hot bang like a firework. The wood hissed and spat where it had been struck, and she looked over her shoulder to see a horror of flailing limbs and glowing, twisting flesh leap after them. It moved with a rippling motion, lunatic faces, eyes and cackling mouths forming and reforming from the liquid matter of its body. Blue and red light flared from within it, strobing in dazzling beams through the archive. Another bolt of phosphorescent brightness streaked towards them, and Keela threw herself and Cinderman flat as it blasted the shelf beside them, sending flaming books and splintered chunks of wood flying. The horrifying monster loped through the stacks on long, elastic limbs, its speed and agility incredible, and Keela could see that it was circling around to get behind them. She dragged Cinderman to his feet as she heard the monster's maddening laughter cackling behind her. The iterator seemed to have regained some measure of his senses after her punch, and once again they ran between the twisting, narrow rows of shelves towards the chamber's exit. Behind her, she could hear the whoosh of flames as the horror squeezed its body into the row and books erupted into geysers of pink fire. The end of the row was just ahead of her, and she almost laughed as she heard the klaxons that warned of a fire screech in alarm. Surely, someone would come to help them now. They burst from the end of the row, and Cinderman stumbled, again carrying her to the floor with him. They fell in a tangle of limbs, scrambling desperately to put some distance between them and the loathsome monster. Keela rolled onto her back as it pushed itself from the row of shelves, its rippling bulk undulating with roiling internal motion. Leering eyes and wide, fang-filled mouths erupted across its amorphous body, and she screamed as it vomited a breath of searing blue fire towards her. Though she knew it would do no good, she closed her eyes and threw her arms up to ward off the flames, but a sudden silence enveloped her, and the expected burning agony never hit.
"Harry," said a trembling voice, "I cannot hold it much longer."
Keela turned and saw the white-robed form of the vengeful spirit's mistress of Astropaths, Ing Mae Singh, standing in the archive chamber's doorway with her hands outstretched before her.
"Horus, my brother," said Magnus, "you must not believe whatever he has told you. It is lies, all of it. Lies that disguise his sinister purpose."
"Those with courage and character to speak the truth always seem sinister to the ignorant," snarled Erebus. "You dare speak of lies while you stand before us in the warp? How can this be without the use of sorcery? Sorcery you were expressly forbidden to practice by the Emperor himself."
"Do not presume to judge me, whelp!"
shouted Magnus, hurling a glittering ball of fire towards the first chaplain. Horus watched as the flame streaked towards Erebus and enveloped him. But as the fire died, he saw that Erebus was unharmed, his armor not so much as scratched, and his skin unblemished. Erebus laughed.
"You are too far away, Magnus. Your powers cannot reach me here."
Horus watched as Magnus hurled bolt after bolt of lightning from his fingertips, amazed and horrified to see his brother employing such powers. Though all the legions had once had librarius divisions that trained warriors to tap into the power of the warp, they had been disbanded after the Emperor's decree at the Council of Nicaea. Clearly, Magnus had paid that order no mind, and such conceit staggered Horus. Eventually, his Cyclopean brother recognized that his powers were having no effect on Erebus, and he dropped his hands to his side.
"You see," said Erebus, turning to Horus, "he cannot be trusted."
"Nor can you, Erebus," said Horus. "You came to me cloaked in the identity of another. You claim my brother Magnus is naught but some warp beast set upon devouring me, and then you speak to him as though he is exactly as he seems. If he is here by sorcery, then how else can you be here?"
Erebus paused, caught in his lie, and said,
"You are right, my lord. The sorcery of the Serpent Lodge has sent me to you to help you, and to offer you this chance of life. The Serpent Priestess had to cut my throat to do it, and once I return to the world of flesh, I will kill the bitch for that. But know that everything I have shown you is real. You saw it yourself, and you know the truth."
Magnus towered over the figure of Erebus. His crimson mane shook with fury, but Horus saw that he kept tight rein on his anger as he spoke.
"The future is not set, Horus. Erebus may have shown you a future, but that is only one possible future. It is not absolute. Have faith in that."
"Pah!" sneered Erebus. "Faith is just another way of not wanting to know what is true."
"You think I don't know that, Magnus," snapped Horus. "I know of the warp and the tricks it can play with the mind. I am not stupid. I knew that this was not Sejanus, just as I know that without a context, everything I have seen here is meaningless."
Horus saw the crestfallen look on Erebus's face and laughed.
"You must take me for a fool, Erebus, if you thought that such simple parlor tricks would bewitch me to your cause."
"My brother," smiled Magnus, "you are a wonder to me."
"Be quiet," snarled Horus. "You are no better than Erebus. You will not manipulate me like this, for I am Horus. I am the War Master."
Horus relished their confusion. One was his brother, the other a warrior he had counted as a valued counselor and devoted follower. He had sorely misjudged them both.
"I can trust neither of you," he said. "I am Horus, and I make my own fate."
Erebus stepped towards him, with his hands outstretched in supplication.
"You should know that I came to you at the behest of my lord and master, Lorgar. He already has knowledge of the Emperor's quest to ascend to godhood, and has sworn himself to the powers of the warp. When the Emperor rejected Lorgar's worship, he found other gods all too willing to accept his devotion. My Primarch's power has grown tenfold, and it is but a fraction of the power that could be yours were you to pledge yourself to their cause."
"He lies," cried Magnus. "Lorgar is loyal. He would never turn against the Emperor."
Horus listened to Erebus's words, and knew with utter certainty that he spoke the truth. Lorgar, his most beloved brother, had already embraced the power of the warp. Warring emotions vied for supremacy within him. Disappointment, anger, and, if he was honest, a spark of jealousy that Lorgar should have been chosen first. If wise Lorgar would choose such powers as patrons, was there not some merit in that?
"Horus,"
said Magnus. "I am running out of time. Please, be strong, my brother. Think of what this mongrel dog is asking you to do. He would have you spit on your oaths of loyalty. He is forcing you to betray the Emperor and turn on your brother Astartes. You must trust the Emperor to do what is right."
"The Emperor plays dice with the fate of the galaxy," countered Erebus, "and he throws them where they cannot be seen."
"Horus, please!" cried Magnus, his voice taking on a ghostly quality as his image began to fade. "You must not do this, or all we have fought for will be cast to ruin forever! You cannot do this terrible thing!"
"Is it so terrible?" asked Erebus. "It is but a small thing, really. Deliver the Emperor to the gods of the warp, and unlimited power can be yours. I told you before that they have no interest in the realms of men, and that promise still holds true. The galaxy will be yours to rule over, as the new master of mankind."
"Enough!" roared Horus, and the world was silence. "I have made my choice." Keeler helped Kirill Sindamin to his feet, and together they fled through the archive chamber's door. Ingmei Singh's trembling arms were still outstretched, and Keeler could feel waves of psychic cold radiating from her with the effort of holding the horror within the chamber at bay.
"Close the door,"
said Ingmei Singh through gritted teeth. Veins stood out on her neck and forehead, and her porcelain features were lined with pain. Keeler didn't need to be told twice, and she dropped Sindamin to get the door, as Ingmei Singh backed away with slow, shuffling steps.
"No!"
shouted the astropath, dropping her arms. Keeler hauled on the door as the roaring, seething laughter of the beast swelled once again. Alarm klaxons and its shrieks of insanity filled her ears as the door swung shut. Something heavy impacted on the other side, and she could feel its raw heat through the metal. Ingmei Singh helped her, but the astropath was too frail to be of much use, and Keeler knew they couldn't hold the door for long.
"What did you do?"
demanded Ingmei Singh.
"I don't know," gasped Keeler. "The iterator was reading from a book, and that thing just appeared from nowhere. What in the name of the Emperor is it?"
"A beast from beyond the gates of the Imperium,"
said Ingmei Singh, as the door shook with another burning impact.
"I felt the build-up of warp energy, and got here as quickly as I could."
"Shame you weren't quicker, eh?" said Keeler. "Can you send it back?"
Ingmei Singh shook her head as a thrashing pseudopod of pinkish light flicked through the door and grazed Keeler's arm. Its touch seared through her robes and burned her skin. She screamed, flinching from the door, and gripped her arm in agony. The horror slammed into the door once more, and the impact sent her and the astropath flying. Blinding light filled the passageway, and Keeler shielded her eyes as she felt hands upon her shoulders, seeing that Kirill Sindamin was on his feet once more. He dragged her to her feet and said,
"I think I may have mistranslated part of the book."
"You think?" snapped Keeler as they backed away from the abomination.
"Or maybe you translated it just perfectly,"
said Ingmei Singh, desperately scrambling away from the archive chamber's door. The beast of light oozed outwards in a slithering loop of limbs, each one thrashing in blind hunger. Multitudinous eyes rippled and popped like swollen boils across its rubbery skin as it came towards them once more.
"Oh, Emperor, protect us,"
whispered Keeler as she turned to run. The beast shuddered at her words, and Ingmei Singh tugged on her sleeve, crying,
"Come on, we can't fight it."
Euphrates Keeler suddenly realized that wasn't true, and shrugged off the astropath's grip. Reaching beneath her robes to pull out the imperial eagle she kept on the end of her necklace. Its silver surfaces shone in the creature's dazzling light, brighter than it had any reason to be, and feeling hot in her palm. She smiled beatifically, as she understood with complete clarity that everything since the Whisperheads had been preparing her for this moment.
"Euphrates, come on!"
shouted Sindamin in terror. A whipping limb formed from the horror's body, and another gout of blue fire roared towards her. Keeler stood firm before it, and held the symbol of her faith out in front of her.
"The Emperor protects!"
she screamed, as the flames washed over her. Rain fell in heavy sheets, and Loken could feel a tangible charge to the night air, as dark thunderheads pressed down on the tens of thousands of people gathered around the Delphos. Lightning bolts fenced above him, and the sense of anticipation was almost unbearable. 9 days had passed since the War Master had been interred within the Temple of the Serpent Lodge, and with each passing day the weather had worsened. Rain fell in an unending downpour that threatened to wash away the makeshift camps of the pilgrims, and booming peals of thunder shook the sky like ringing hammer blows. The War Master had once told Loken that the cosmos was too large and sterile for melodrama, but the skies above Davin seemed determined to prove him wrong. Togadon and Vipus stood with him at the top of the steps, and hundreds of the sons of Horus followed behind the three of them. Company captains, squad leaders, file officers, and warriors had come to Davin to witness what would be either their salvation or their undoing. They had marched through the singing crowds, the dirty beige robes of remembrances mixed in with army uniforms and civilian dress.
"Looks like the entire bloody expedition's here," Togadon had said as they marched up the steps, trampling trinkets and baubles left as offerings to the War Master beneath their armoured boots.
From the top of the processional steps, Loken could see the same group he had faced 9 days previously, with the exception of Malachurst, who had returned to the ship some days before. Rain ran down Loken's face as a flash of lightning lit up the surface of the great bronze gateway, making it shine like a great wall of fire. The gathered Astartes warriors stood sentinel before it in the rain. Abaddon, Aximand, Targost, Sedire, Echidon, and Kyber. None of them had abandoned their vigil before the gates of Delphos, and Loken wondered if they had bothered to eat, drink, or sleep since he had last laid eyes upon them.
"What do we do now, Garvey?" asked Vipers.
"We join our brothers, and wait."
"Wait for what?"
"We'll know that when it happens," said Togadon. "Won't we, Garvey?"
"I certainly hope so, Taric," replied Loken. "Come on."
The three of them set off towards the gateway, the thunder echoing from the massive structure's sides, and the snakes atop each pillar slithering with each flashing bolt of lightning. Loken watched as his brothers in front of the gate came to stand in line at the edge of the rippling pool of water, the full moon reflected in its black surface. Horus Aximand had once called it an omen. Was it again? Loken didn't know whether to hope that it was or not. The sons of Horus followed their captains down the wide processional steps in their hundreds, and Loken kept a grip on his temper, knowing that if things went ill here, there would almost certainly be bloodshed. The thought horrified him, and he hoped with all his heart that such a tragedy could be averted. But he would be ready if it came to war.
"Are you battle-ready?"
hissed Loken to Torgadon and Vipers on a discreet vox channel.
"Always,"
nodded Torgadon.
"Full load on every man."
"Yes," said Vipers.
"You really think—" "No," said Loken. "But be ready in case we need to fight. Keep your humours balanced, and it will not come to that."
"You too, Garvey,"
warned Torgadon. The long column of Astartes warriors reached the pool, the War Master's bearers standing on its opposite side, stoic and unrepentant.
"Loken," said Sergar Targost, "are you here to fight us?"
"No,"
said Loken, seeing that, like them, the others were locked and loaded.
"We've come to see what happens. It's been 9 days, Sergar."
"It has indeed,"
nodded Targost.
"Where is Erebus? Have you seen him since you put the War Master in this place?"
"No,"
growled Abaddon, his long hair unbound and his eyes hostile.
"We have not. What does that have to do with anything?"
"Calm yourself, Ezekiel," said Togadon. "We're all here for the same thing."
"Loken," said Aximand, "there has been bad blood between us all, but that must end now. For us to turn on one another would dishonor the War Master's memory."
"You speak as though he's already dead, Horus."
"We will see," said Aximand. "This was always a forlorn hope, but it was all we had."
Loken looked into the haunted eyes of Horus Aximand, seeing the despair and doubt that plagued him, and felt his anger towards his brother diminish. Would he have acted any differently had he been present when the decision to inter the War Master had been taken? Could he, in all honesty, say that he would not have accepted the decision of his friends and peers if the situation had been reversed? He and Horus Axeman might even now be standing on different sides of the moon-shimmered pool.
"Then let us wait as brothers, united in hope," said Loken.
And Axeman smiled gratefully. The palpable tension lifted from the confrontation, and Loken, Torgadon, and Vipers marched around the pool to stand with their brothers before the vast gate. A dazzling bolt of lightning reflected from the gate as the Mournivals stood shoulder to shoulder with one another, and a thunderous boom that had nothing to do with the storm split the night. Loken saw a dark line appear in the center of the gate as the thunder was suddenly silenced and the lightning stilled in the space of a heartbeat. The sky was mystifyingly calm, as though the storm had blown out and the heavens had paused in their revelries, better to witness the unfolding drama on the planet below. Slowly, the gate began to open. The flames bathed Euphrates Keela, but they were cold, and she felt no pain from them. The silver eagle blazed in her hand, thrust before her like a talisman, and she felt a wondrous energy fill her, rushing through her from the tips of her toes to the shorn ends of her hair. "The power of the Emperor commands you, abomination!" she yelled, the words unfamiliar, but feeling right. Ingmei Singh and Kirill Sinderman watched her in amazement as she took one step, then another, towards the horror. The monster was transfixed, whether by her courage or her faith, she didn't know, but whatever the reason, she was thankful for it. Its limbs flailed as though some invisible force attacked it, its screeching laughter turning into the pitiful wails of a child. "In the name of the Emperor, go back to the warp, you bastard!" said Keela, her confidence growing as the substance of the monster diminished, skins of light shearing away from its body. The silver eagle grew hotter in her hand, and she could feel the skin of her palms blistering under its heat. Ingmei Singh joined her, adding her own powers to Keela's assault on the monster. The air around the astropath grew colder, and Keela moved her hand close to the psyker in the hopes of cooling the blazing eagle. The monster's internal light was fading and flickering, its nebulous outline spitting embers of light as though it fought to hold on to existence. The light from Keela's eagle outshone its hellish illumination tenfold, and the entire corridor was bleached shadowless with its brilliance.
"Whatever you're doing, keep doing it!" cried Ingmei Singh. "It's weakening!"
Keela tried to answer, but found that she had no voice left. The wondrous energy that had filled her was now streaming from her through the eagle, taking her own strength with it. She tried to drop the eagle, but it was stuck fast to her hand, the red-hot metal fusing itself to her skin. From behind her, Keela heard the clatter of armored ship's crew and their cries of astonishment at the scene before them.
"Please,"
she whispered, as her legs gave out and she collapsed to the floor. The blazing light faded from her hand, and the last things she saw were the disintegrating mass of the horror and Cinderman's rapturous face staring down at her in wonder. The only sound was that of the gate. Loken's entire existence shrank to the growing darkness between its two halves, as he held his breath and waited to see what might lie beyond. The gates swung fully open, and he risked a glance at his fellow sons of Horus, seeing the same desperate hope in every face. Not a single sound disturbed the night, and Loken felt melancholy rise in him, as he realized that this must simply be the automated opening of the temple doors. The War Master was dead. A sick dread settled on Loken, and his head sank to his chest. Then he heard the sound of footsteps, and looked up to see the gleam of white and gold plate emerge from the darkness. Horus strode from the Delphos with his cloak of royal purple billowing behind him, and his golden sword held high above him. The eye in the center of his breastplate blazed a fiery red, and the laurels at his forehead framed features that were beautiful and terrible in their magnificence. The War Master stood before them, unbowed and more vital than ever, the sheer physicality of his presence robbing every one of them of speech. Horus smiled and said,
"You are a sight for sore eyes, my sons."
Torgadon punched the air in elation and shouted,
"Lupercal!"
He laughed and ran towards the War Master, breaking the spell that had fallen on the rest of them. The Mournival rushed to this reunion with their lord and master, joyous cries of,
"Lupercal!
erupting from the throat of every Astartes warrior as word spread back through the files and into the crowd surrounding the temple. The pilgrims around the Delphos took up the chant, and 10,000 throats were soon crying the War Master's name.
Lupercal! Lupercal! Lupercal!
The walls of the crater shook to deafening cheers that went on long into the night.